This is Bill Wellner, Chief Engineer for the IE America Radio Network, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
The number of U.S. service members killed and wounded in Iraq has more than doubled in the past 4 months compared with the 4 months preceding them, according to Pentagon statistics. From September 1st through Friday, 145 service members were killed in action in Iraq, compared with 65 from May 1st to August 30th. The 2 4-month intervals cover counterinsurgency operations far costlier than combat operations, which Bush declared over on May 1st. Increases in those wounded in action have been equally dramatic this fall since September 1st. 1,209 soldiers have received battlefield wounds, more than twice the 574 wounded in action from May 1st through August 30th. Democrat Dennis Kucinich says the Bush administration is using elevated terror alerts for political gain. The Ohio congressman campaigning at a library services company in central New Hampshire on Friday said if the administration officials have information about terror threats, they should act on it instead of advertising the threat to scare Americans. The government is trying to place fear everywhere, he said. The elevated terror alert level over the holidays is confusing Americans and accomplishing little, he said. Why didn't they just put extra security out, he asked. They are building up fear to become more powerful politically. Another 5 Iraqis died from injuries sustained in Saturday's suicide bomb attacks in Karbala, bringing the death toll to 18, local officials said on Sunday. The official put the number of Iraqis wounded in the attack at 160 on top of 24 coalition soldiers wounded, bringing the overall number of wounded to more than 180. On Saturday, insurgents used car bombs, mortars, and small gunfires to attack 2 coalition military bases and the city council in Karbala, dealing the first heavy blow to the 9,000-strong Polish-led multinational force deployed in central southern Iraq. It also appeared to be the first insurgent offensive that inflicted death toll on Bulgarian and Thai troops, no more than 500 both, operating in the war-torn country. More after this.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick,
who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela,
who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A man in Sicily asked a friend to shoot him in the groin in the hope of making his ex-girlfriend feel sorry for him, police said on Friday. Police said they became suspicious when the 27-year-old went to a hospital with wounds from a hunting rifle's pellets in the groin area. At first, he said the wounds had been caused in a hunting accident, but later he admitted he had asked a friend, 16, to shoot him in an attempt to win back the affection of his girlfriend, who had apparently left him because of his violent character. The man's wounds are expected to heal, doctors said. For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Wish I could watch some TV. If only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
At last, the golden age of television is upon us. But alas, this is not the golden age of TV quality, but literally the age of TV gold, when advertisers have become the programming. Leading the way is Disney's ABC television network, which has now opened its expanse of our public airwaves to complete domination by sponsors. I don't mean just the ads that sponsors run on its shows, or even the not-so-subtle placement of sponsors' products in the shows, but rather sponsors that become the featured character of the show. Sears has stepped out as the first of ABC's new advertising stars, putting itself forward as the centerpiece of the network's latest reality show called Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. Not that Sears has any actual dramatic talent, but it does have more than $1 million that it paid to ABC to write the corporation into the script of this 6-part series portraying stories of home renovation. The actual actors will be using Sears tools in their work, adding Sears appliances to the renovated homes and decorating with Sears furniture. If that's too subtle for viewers, there'll also be Sears trucks delivering merchandise. Branded workers from Sears Home Improvement Centers will occasionally arrive on the scene, and the show's cast will make trips to Sears for supplies. The commercially crass rationale for this all-Sears show is that advertisers need a way to outfox you TV viewers who are using your clickers to zap past those annoying commercial breaks. So forget the ads. The sponsors will be the shows. To fabricate this great leap forward, ABC even has a senior vice president for integrated marketing and promotion. He assures us that while, quote, Sears plays a role in the personality of the show, ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped in a show. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, there still are a few artistic standards in television.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, streaming live around the planet on radiopower.org, on the internet, ieamericaradio.com, and live365.com. Radiopower.org now informs us that they're averaging 10,000 listeners a day. That's an amazing number. And, of course, streaming from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, Stream 145. You have the Sirius satellite radio system. Boy, so much to talk about. How disastrous are this administration's military policies? What sort of future are we creating for ourselves and the world with the adventures of George W. Bush that completely contradict his campaign statements, you know? I don't think we should. He's a, you know, the best way to make people not like you is to go around the world telling people we live like this, so should you. And now we're doing it. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe not. Maybe we're doing it in a way that's useful. Maybe not. Let's take a look at that. A lot of things have happened over the last few days that are worthy of note. I think that one of the most interesting is the recess appointment that George Bush just pulled. The United States Constitution, see, back when the Constitution was first written, the founders were dealing with the reality that in the very beginning, being a legislator, a senator, a congressman, was something that was a part-time job at the national level. And so, you know, Congress would meet for a month or two, and then they'd go into recess for 4, 5, 6 months. They'd meet for a month or two. And it was not, you know, it didn't really become a full-time thing until the early 19th century. And so written into the Constitution is this little provision in the, I believe it's Article 1 that deals with the executive. I'd have to go back and look. Anyway, there's this little provision that says that if Congress is in recess, then those appointments that are necessary for the functioning, for the conduct of the government, that are normally made by, you know, that are normally suggested by the executive branch, by the president, and then agreed to, ratified by the Senate, that those appointments can be made simply by the president when the House and Senate are in recess, and rather than serving their full term, say if somebody was appointing the Fed chairman, you know, which is a 14-year term, instead of it running the full term, that appointment lasts until the next election cycle, or until the next full year, one or the other. I forget which it is, but the functionality of it is that it's going to run until 2005 now. And this ability to make recess appointments is something that it was an Emergency Powers Act, essentially, written into the Constitution. It was so that, you know, when George Washington was president, if his Secretary of the Treasury had died, I believe it was Alexander Hamilton in the Washington administration, he could have, and the Senate was not in session, he could have appointed somebody to fill in. I mean, that was why it was put there. But, and for 220 some odd years, that's, you know, presidents have honored that. Well, not George W. Now we have, very interesting, 12 recess appointments that Bush made the last Friday, right after Congress adjourned. These were appointments to various federal positions that had been that were contentious, that the Senate was saying, no, we're not going to do this, or we haven't done our due diligence, or we haven't really looked into this person yet. And even though the Constitution requires the president to get the advice and consent of the Senate, unless, you know, he has no option because the Senate is in recess, well, yeah, they took their Christmas recess. This is not exactly a national emergency. But here we have these two appointments in particular, Gayheart Gaines of Florida and Claudia Puig of Florida. And they were both appointed to be directors of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Board of Directors. Now, number one, that does not seem like the kind of opening that, if it wasn't filled, would create a national emergency and force the president to execute an appointment, a recess appointment. But even more, and these are, there were 12 of them altogether. The Corporation for National Community Service, the National Labor Relations Board, this is a significant one. The board that oversees activities of unions. Ronald E. Meisberg of Virginia, Bush had nominated him back in November, and he just put him in. Bang. But these two, Gayheart Gaines and Claudia Puig, very interesting paths, and they're characteristic of the kind of appointments that we have. You'll recall John Kennedy during the Kennedy-Nixon debates, and he was good to his word when he became president, said that he would not appoint as ambassadors, and he was making a broader point that in every realm, when you appoint somebody, it should be not because of a political favor, but because of their skills. And those of you who listen to the program regularly, you've heard me play that clip of Kennedy. I won't drag it out again. But Kennedy said that he would not appoint an ambassador who didn't speak the language of the country that he was sending him to if there was a qualified person among all of the candidates for the ambassador position. And he was, his idea was that our ambassadors should be people who are interacting with the State Department, understand the country, understand the culture, can really and truly represent us. The Bush administration, of course, has appointed ambassadors based on how much money they contributed to either the Republican Party or to George W.'s campaign. And here now we see the same thing going on with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Bush administration has rewarded two major Republican donors with seats on the 9-member board of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is from Common Cause. Cheryl Halpern and Gayheart Gaines and their respective families have contributed more than $816,000 to the Republican Party. Now you know what it takes to get a seat on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting if George W. is in office. Halpern indicated that she was welcome empowering Corporation for Public Broadcasting board members to intervene in program content. Now, she actually testified before Congress, and this is, I think, probably the main reason why the Senate has chosen not to appoint this woman. Because the board of directors of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting is supposed to run it as a business, not involve themselves in the programming. That's it's just like in a company. If you're on the board of directors of a corporation, you don't involve yourself in hiring and firing people. The job of a board of directors is to hire the senior management and define the course that they should follow. And if the senior management doesn't follow that course, you replace them. But a board member in any kind of corporation, any kind of rational corporation, a board member does not involve themselves in day-to-day operations. That's beyond their job description. In fact, it would create absolute and utter chaos. Ask anybody who's ever been involved in any corporation. And here Gaines, who is an ardent supporter of Newt Gingrich, she was a little more than an ardent supporter, in fact. She was the head of his GOPAC political action committee. She was the chairman or chairwoman of that. And she traveled around the country raising money in $10,000 chunks, recruiting what are called charter members to Gingrich's group. And this was at the time that Gingrich was publicly saying that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting should be put to death, that there should be no funding for public radio and television. I find that interesting. And Halperin, the other one, when Senator Trent Lott criticized Bill Moyers as the most partisan and non-objective person I know in media of any kind, she agreed. I mean, these two have ideological agendas that are extreme to the right. We're not talking about your normal Republicans. We're not talking about, you know, mainstream conservatives. We're not talking about people that Barry Goldwater would have been comfortable with. We're talking about extremists. However, they have succeeded in contributing a substantial amount of cash to the Bush campaigns, and therefore, they're in like Flint. $800,000. This is a common cause is calling this George Bush's $800,000 pledge break. Because, you know, it's essentially, yeah, anyway, enough about that. It's interesting that the echoes of this mad cow disease thing, just this, I mean, there's no politics associated with this at the moment, I suppose. But now they're starting to recall soaps and candles because they render down cows as candles, lubricants, soaps, bone meal used in fertilizer and animal feed. Apparently they're still refeeding cows to cows. And well, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And now to our this is an extraordinary quote. Yeah, Lyndon Johnson in 1966 said about the Vietnam War, "If we don't stop the Reds in South Vietnam, tomorrow they will be in Hawaii, and next week they'll be in San Francisco." This was the rationale for, you know, that led to the death of 50,000 of our young men and women, and some 2 million Vietnamese. George W. Bush, on August 26, 2003, said, "Our military is confronting terrorists in Iraq and Afghanistan so that our people will not have to confront terrorist violence in New York or St. Louis or Los Angeles." And Howard Dean said, when we caught Osama, "Well, I don't think that that's making us any safer." And apparently Tom Ridge agreed, because he promptly took us from yellow to orange alert. Our quote for the day, by the way, from Thomas Jefferson: "The care of human life and happiness, and not their destruction," Jefferson said, "is the first and only object of good government." Thomas Jefferson, in the third president of the United States. Tony Blair is really in hot water right now. A bit of a mess Mr. Blair is facing. And this gets us to this question for the hour: how disastrous are this administration's military policies? From The Observer, the Guardian newspaper, the Sunday paper is called The Observer. In a Christmas message to British troops, Blair claimed there was, quote, "massive evidence of a huge system of clandestine laboratories. The Iraqi survey group had unearthed compelling evidence," according to Blair, "that showed Saddam Hussein had attempted to conceal weapons." So Tony Blair goes out and says, "Yes, don't worry, we got there's evidence that they had a network of laboratories." So the reporters went to Paul Bremer and said, "Is this true?" And Bremer said, "No, He flatly dismissed the claim as untrue. He said it's a red herring, probably put out by somebody opposed to military action in Iraq who wanted to undermine the coalition. I don't know where the words came from, but that is not what David Kay has said. Said Paul Bremer. It sounds like a red herring to me. Tony Blair, a little red on his face. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
What does most political talk radio sound like?
Good morning and welcome to my show. I'm fine, thanks for asking.
A little self-centered?
We're not going to take any calls right now because I want to talk. Remember, the show is at its best when it's more me and less of you.
Not very listener-friendly.
We're talking about all the progress we've made in Iraq. Tom and Seattle, you're on the air. Make it quick.
Yeah, I don't really agree with what you said about...
And I don't agree with you calling my show. Let's get it clear, people. If you don't agree with me, then you must be a communist.
A little one-sided?
The fact is that the Dixie Chicks should be sent to Iraq to live in a cave with Osama. Jeff in California, you're on the air. Make it quick.
I have a comment on how the U.S. has completely forgotten about Osama bin Laden.
No, you don't have a comment, Jeff, but what you do have is the privilege to listen to my show, and you're abusing it, and I am offended.
All around bad radio.
Says you.
But there is an alternative.
What?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to IEAmericaRadio.com.
You'll be back.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will.
Get out of here.
Don't touch me.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
I mean, turn your radio on.
That's
song we play. Welcome to WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan, our newest affiliate. We're very pleased to be on the air there. Our number, if you'd like to call the program, is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Today, day 168, since somebody, some senior administration official, committed a not just a felony, but treason, according to George Herbert Walker Bush. The crime similar to that for which Julius and Ethel Rosenberg got the electric chair, outing a CIA agent and bringing down a multinational corporation that was set up as a CIA front. Oh, Valerie Plame wasn't just a CIA agent. She was involved in counterterrorism operations. And all because her husband wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times saying that George Bush had lied in his State of the Union address about uranium from Niger, and that Condi Rice knew that it was wrong, and that Bush knew that it was wrong and used it anyway. And it was payback. It was punishment. And whoever orchestrated this crime, the senior administration official, 168 days ago, who might it be?
I don't know. If we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, well, 168 days, 322 days since we started searching for weapons of mass destruction. We've 322 days and over 400 dead soldiers. You know, Clinton lied and nobody died. Bush lied and a whole bunch of people have died. 808 days since the anthrax killers. This has really slipped off the radar screen. Congress is presented with this huge chunk of legislation that would erode our civil liberties. Patriot Act. And the two people who were most outspokenly opposed to it, Tom Daschle, who was the head of the Senate Democrats, and at that point, the Democrats were in charge. Remember, this was just after Jim Jeffords jumped sides because of George Bush's education policies, his gutting education policies. So Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, the senator from Vermont, who was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, the committee that this bill would have to make it out of. 9/11 happens, and a few weeks later, they just kind of pull out of the hat a 1,000-page bill. My recollection is actually it was 385 pages, but I could be wrong. Anyhow, this huge piece of legislation, very carefully crafted. This was nothing new. Cons have been pushing for this kind of thing for a long time. And who are the two folks who get anthrax in the mail? By coincidence? Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy. 808 days since somebody sent anthrax to the two top Democrats looking at the Patriot Act, knocking them out of their offices, away from their paperwork, and ultimately to the passage of that bill. 832 days since we declared we would find Osama bin Laden dead or alive. Interesting things going on in Europe. And right after the break here coming up, I've got a Berlusconi alert for you. Regular listeners of the program know Silvio Berlusconi his story is just extraordinary. I'll tell you about it when we get back after the break. But before that, a storm is brewing over reports that the White House ignored intelligence that could have prevented 9/11. You know, CBS News reported this. Howard Dean talked about it. And cons on TV are still, the talk radio, talking heads are still, how could he have said that? He's outrageous. It's wrong. George Bush knew in advance. Well, it turns out, August 6th, 2001, a month before 9/11, George Bush got a briefing in Crawford, Texas, that said Osama is going to hijack airplanes and hit buildings in New York and Washington. And immediately John Ashcroft stopped flying on commercial airplanes. So he told John Ashcroft, we know that, but he didn't tell us and he didn't tell the airlines. Is this going to be a problem for George W.? This is the real Free Speech Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
We'll be right back. Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse-click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse-click away.
Hi, this is Mike Malloy.
And this is Kathy Bay.
And on behalf of everyone here at IE America Radio, we want to wish you a happy holiday season.
And a peaceful new year.
Some remote glaciers have become the final resting place for chemicals that were used thousands of miles away. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Chemical contaminants can travel far from where they were produced and then accumulate in some of the world's coldest areas. On high mountain slopes and inside the Arctic Circle, scientists have found high concentrations of pesticides and PCBs locked in the ice of glaciers. Jules Blaise is an environmental toxicologist at the University of Ottawa. He says there's a good reason certain chemicals tend to accumulate in these places. In temperate climates, they can evaporate easily in the warm air and drift in the winds. In cooler environments, they can condense again, especially if there's snow.
Snowflakes are very good at scavenging these chemicals from the air and depositing them on the ground. Because snowflakes are very cold and they have a very large surface area, you can picture a snowflake with its many spikes and shapes, which provide a very large surface area for these chemicals to adhere to.
If the snow melts, the chemicals can evaporate again and blow away. But if the snow falls onto a glacier and freezes, the chemicals are locked into the ice and start to accumulate. Blaise says he's found PCBs inside glaciers at high concentrations, even though the chemicals have been banned in the United States and Canada for decades.
Many, many decades of ice is stored in any given glacier, and many of the chemicals that we used back in the 60s are still stored in these glacial horizons.
When the glaciers melt, the water flowing away from them can carry chemical pollution into lakes and streams that would otherwise be pristine. The chemicals can build up in the tissues of aquatic animals, and Blaise says some lakes in the Yukon have become so contaminated that health officials have warned people there against eating too many fish. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey. This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damshutter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
Our family cheers. Have
a happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's time for our Berlusconi alert. Yes, indeed, Silvio Berlusconi. Here we have the national anthem of Italy. Yes, Silvio Berlusconi, the guy who started out as a small-time crook and then became a small-time businessman and then built his business up. And in the course of building it up, he bought a television station. And then he bought another. And then he bought a radio station. And then he bought another. And then he bought a television network, and now one man, Silvio Berlusconi, controls 95%. Well, here, I'll quote from the Washington Post. He influences 95% of national television broadcasting. When Berlusconi took office, he demanded the ouster of two political talk show hosts who had been critical of him prior to the elections. They have not since appeared on the air. And Berlusconi, this guy is incredible. He bought the state, he bought the radio station, TV station, more and more and more and more, until he had so much power. He had so much reach, so much media power, that 95% of the radio and television airwaves of Italy were under his control. And then he started buying newspapers and magazines. And then he ran his party. He started promoting, he created a political party and ran for prime minister. Now, of course, you don't run for prime minister. You run to get your party elected with a majority. He did that, and he became prime minister of Italy. And now he's also the president of the European Union for 6 months. And his party, his business partner just was sent to prison for bribing a federal judge and other mafia-like activities. And Berlusconi was under investigation. So Italy was all embarrassed about this, so they got this law passed that during the 6 months that he was the president of Europe, he could not be investigated because they didn't want to be embarrassed. And that's expiring now. And then his party passed, and then the federal judges, their equivalent of the Supreme Court, said, wait a minute, it's wrong for one man to control all the media in the country and be the prime minister. And so our Berlusconi alert is what he did on Tuesday. This is an article by Daniel Williams in the Washington Post. Berlusconi's cabinet empowers his TV station. On Tuesday, Berlusconi pushed through a controversial measure concerning the future of his major media holdings. Berlusconi's cabinet decreed that, in opposition to a court order, one of his family's three private national television stations can continue land-based transmissions instead of being forced to broadcast solely by satellite, which would have reduced the station's earnings. He described the idea of a conflict of interest between his political job and his private business, which he continues to run while he's prime minister, as a fable. I mean, at least with Dick Cheney, even though Dick Cheney can receive compensation from Halliburton of up to $1 million a year every year, I believe last year it was $182,000 that he took from Halliburton. It was more than $100,000 and less than $200,000 anyway, and has every year that he's been vice president. And Dick Cheney has hundreds of thousands of unexercised stock options in Halliburton, which are increasing in value every time Halliburton gets another no-bid contract. At least Dick Cheney isn't still running Halliburton. I mean, here you've got Berlusconi. And look out, folks. And you want to know why people are concerned about media mergers and about all these things. Take a look at Italy. Take a look at Italy. There's an article on The Observer, the British paper this weekend. He says, we neglect this, by Will Hutton, the new sick man of Europe, talking about Berlusconi. We neglect Italy at our peril. It has always been a forerunner of European trends, whether the Renaissance, fascism in the 1920s, and now the integration into a powerful unity of media baron and financial casino capitalism, all the while co-opting the state to serve its ends. As prime minister in office, Berlusconi won with the support of his own media. He is able to practice what his TV companies and papers preach. His control of the media suffocates debate and criticism. The result? Bad government. Nearly extinct political pluralism. And a lesson for all. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. 1-800-TALK-YES is our telephone number. If you would care to call, if you have thoughts, comments, suggestions, criticisms. Criticisms in particular. I love to hear from people who disagree with me. 1-800-TALK-YES. 1-800-825-5937. And Phil in Florida is on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Phil?
Yeah. You know how they say, you know, the Republicans say government doesn't work and then they get elected and prove it?
Yeah, well, they've gotten elected and certainly bloated it.
I want to give you a real-life example that I just experienced. I got a call from a telemarketer this morning, and so I got the address and everything. I was going to file the complaint on the no-call list. So I had made sure that I had, of course, submitted my telephone number and name and went through, you know, all the baloney. And then when I went to the website to submit it, it said I wasn't registered. So if you think you're registered, you need to check it out. You probably aren't, because Bush has probably screwed that,
you know,
that
Phil,
up too, like he screwed everything else up.
Yeah, that no call list, though, is also, there's a huge gotcha in that. And that is that the politicians wrote an exemption into the no call list, which says that you can be called, even if your name is on the list, by nonprofit organizations and by political parties or people representing politics.
Yeah, but this was neither one of those.
I know, but what I'm saying is that when the campaigns, I mean, this no call list was such a boon to the telemarketing industry, because what they're going to do is the same thing that the seminar industry started doing when third class postal rates, back in the mid 80s. No, it would have been the mid 1990s. It was the late 1980s. There was this huge increase in first class postal rates, but third class didn't go up so much. So all these companies that did workshops and seminars and things that, you know, would send out 1 million pieces of mail every month to people telling them about, hey, come to our seminar on how to produce newsletters or whatever. All of these companies started setting up nonprofit educational divisions. And there are ways to funnel money out of a nonprofit into a profit, for-profit corporation that are perfectly legal. I mean, the easiest one is, of course, paying salaries. Boom. Now all the things you get in the mail are from nonprofits. And the for-profit companies that decided not to do that, that tried to play the game honestly, got put out of business. The same thing, I predict, is going to happen in the telemarketing industry. You're going to be hearing from nonprofit polling companies that are actually doing push polls. They're actually asking questions that imply products. And you're going to be hearing from politicians. And not only that, they don't have to go out and buy mailing lists anymore. All they have to do is go to the federal government and for free get the do not call list.
Yeah.
And there's your name. So I'm very cynical about that. But anyhow, yeah.
Okay, that's not why I called, though.
Should double check. Okay, why did you call?
This morning, they had a guy from the Council on Foreign Relations. And his mission was twofold: to straighten everybody out, because everybody, of course, is losing sleep over this.
You still there, Phil? Okay, we
hello,
Phil. Yeah, we lost you for a second. Continue.
Okay. I want to talk about this guy who was on C-SPAN this morning.
Yeah, we got it. He's straightening everybody out.
Yeah, he's going to straighten everybody out because he feels everybody's losing sleep over how to define a neocon. I guess, and basically, you know, so he went through all this. He thought America was losing sleep at night in terms of how to define it, the true definition of a neocon.
Right.
But in any event, he's on the Council on Foreign Relations, and he's a contributor to some, I don't know, you know, the fascist standard and stuff like that. But he came on, and they finally admitted it. He said, we need to be the policemen of the world. Now, he said that. And we need to take military action against anybody who threatens us. So he wants to. His mission is to get the Bush administration to get more in line with him.
Yeah, it's Pax Americana, Phil. And it's a disaster. Every country that in the history of the world. I mean, this was the rationale that Hitler used for subduing Europe. You know, it's in part. And every country in the history of the world that has tried to impose peace by absolute domination, military domination, has ended up in the trash bin of history. It just doesn't work. Phil, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Jerry, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Welcome to the program.
You said you wanted somebody to disagree with you.
Okay.
On your comment about mad cow disease, it is illegal to feed any bovine meat and bone meal to any cow, and
right,
has
I know
been
that.
So for 2 years. And as a matter of fact, one of our leading feed companies in this country got some mixed up in cattle feed about a year and a half ago, and then out of their Denver meal, they had to buy the herd and destroy it.
Well, why is it then that in the Associated Press yesterday, It says Laker, Los Angeles-based, I'm not going to name the company anyhow, they named the company, announced Friday it was voluntarily withheld 800 tons of cow byproduct processed in its Seattle and Tacoma, Washington plants, said company spokesman so-and-so. The company, like other renderers, takes what is left of the cow after it is slaughtered and boils it down into tallow used for candles, lubricants, and soaps, and bone meal used in fertilizer and animal feed.
Yes, but it can only be used in pig, horse, and dog feed.
Ah, okay. So there, so it can't be used, but it can under certain circumstances.
Right. You cannot feed bovine to bovine. You cannot feed porcine to porcine, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but if these prions, if mad cow disease microorganism, it's not an organism, it's not alive, it's a twisted protein. But if these prions can jump from cows to people, which you know apparently they do, causing Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, why can't they jump from pigs to pork?
Well, from cows to pigs. That's the thing. They can be fed to pigs. And then fat and renderings from pigs can be fed back to cows.
Yeah, so you got the cycle going, and so we still have the problem. Jerry, I'm not sure you're disagreeing with me, but I appreciate the call. Thank you for calling today. 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number, Jim in Milwaukee's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, happy holidays, Tom.
Well, thank you, Jim, and the same to you.
I heard that fellow this morning on C-SPAN. I dropped my jaw when I heard that guy say that. I couldn't hardly believe it. It's 1984, I think, huh? And
yeah.
But you know, the war hero Bush, you know, he could straighten a lot of this problem out about everybody wondering where he was in the Texas National Guard. All he has to do is produce his DD-214, and that'll tell us everything we need to know.
Well, he can't and he won't. I mean, his two commanding officers are both on record in writing saying that he never showed up for service. He was AWOL. He wasn't just AWOL, actually, because if you're AWOL for more than a certain period of time, as I recall, it's 30 days, you are classified as a deserter.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and so he was a deserter, according to his own military records.
A colonel or General Turnipseed, I believe is his name.
Yes.
He's deceased now. Isn't that a coincidence?
Anyway, yeah, but his testimony had been taken under oath.
But anyway, I heard that fellow this morning. I thought that was kind of an ironic statement coming from a neocon. I mean, absolutely no one in his administration is a neocon. I thought that was funny too. But anyway,
yeah.
Have a good weekend, Tom, and I hope you had a good weekend, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks for calling, Jim. Yeah, this is a real problem with this administration's foreign policy. George Bush during the election was talking rational foreign policy. He was, and I think that many of the people who voted for him because they actually believed that he was going to do the things he said he was going to do during the campaign. And instead, what we've gotten is this extremist right-wing agenda that it has not only not made the world a safer place, but I mean we had the entire world in our hand on 9/11. We had a situation in Baghdad. They were marching in the streets. I mean, all around the world, people, our quote enemies, were in sympathy with us, in empathy with us. The French Le Monde, the main newspaper of France, ran a huge headline: "We are all Americans now." And we had this extraordinary opportunity to pull the world together and to say, some criminals have attacked us, a gang of murderous criminal thugs, and we're going to go after them. But no, this guy wanted the glory and power that comes from being a warrior president. And all the way back to the late 1980s, 1998, some of the people in this administration had been saying, in Dick Cheney in particular, we need the oil in Iraq. I've got the details on that. We'll get to it a little later on in the program. And boom, off we went. We were off and running. 1-800-TALK. Yes, Ruth in Orlando's on the line, Orlando, Florida. Hey, Ruth, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great. What's up, Ruth?
Well, a couple things. I heard this guy on C-SPAN today, too. And I've spent, you know, like an hour and a half frantically trying to get through because the guy was just really jerking every single chain I've got. But there were a couple of things that I found particularly interesting. One is that out of all the people that they put through, there were really only two people that supported what this guy said. The rest of the people were what you would call pretty liberal sounding in what they were having to say to him. And there was, God, there was one woman that was just heart-renderingly, heartbreakingly sad because her son is being deployed to Iraq. And she absolutely believes that this is not where we should be going and what we should be doing. And she's one of the people who is the mom of a reservist whose son does not have body armor issued to him.
Yeah.
And she's wondering, you know, how she's going to be able to pull together the money to buy her son the body armor that he needs when he is deployed to Iraq.
Yeah, this is not just a tragedy, Ruth. This is a crime against America, the way that this administration has conducted this war, the way that they got us into it in the first place. And the whole, the dirty thing, you know, putting a bank robber, Ahmed Chalabi, in charge of the thing. Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Bush is in the worst political trouble of his presidency, according to this new poll. Yeah, they have their work cut out for them. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a phony assassination attempt on Bush like they staged with Reagan? Is it going to be another attack on U.S. soil where another 3,000 Americans and foreigners are going to be killed? Is it going to be another attack on another country? What are they going to do since they can't govern? Huh? So look for another war. The guy is toast, and you know it as well as I do, Truth Seekers, and maybe, just maybe, some Americans are coming out of the ether. But don't count on it, because they'll go right back into the ether as soon as these thugs engineer an act of violence against this country, or another war, or something about Bush. Oh, Bush broke his leg today. He was running and he stumbled. Oh, sympathy, sympathy. You know what I'm talking about.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Disturbing visions, a plaque of the coffins each day. United we stand while they're warring our future away. The spin doctors dance while
welcome back to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. We've got a few minutes left in this hour, and Rob in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is on the line. Hey, Rob, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, thanks a lot, Tom. Hey, I just caught the last end of that one story about Bush being AWOL.
Yeah.
Back in his day when he was serving in the military,
mm-hmm.
and his commanding officer coincidentally died.
Well, I don't think it was coincidental. The guy died of old age.
Well, the guy said it coincidentally died. We're probably thinking Bush had him knocked off.
No, I don't think so. I'm not into conspiracy theories.
What's that?
Like, at least I'm not into that conspiracy theory anyway.
Oh, okay.
There were two of Bush's commanding officers are on the record, and both of them are now dead, but both of them are on the record in writing and, you know, acknowledged and all that sort of thing. But these are old guys. I mean, they were the senior officers
right.
back in the 60s. So, you know, they're in their 80s or 90s now, and they've gone beyond.
Oh, because I was thinking maybe, you know, the Bush administration, you know, got to his commanding officers just so they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't spill the beans, if you will.
No, the cover-up that you find in George W.'s past is when he had his driver's license reissued when he became governor of Texas. And he essentially created a whole brand-new identity for himself. And what it did was it wiped clean all of the previous records of anything that he had done, including his arrest for cocaine possession, for which he had to do 90 days community service. He talks about the community service in his autobiography as if it was something that he just decided to do, to go down and work in the black community and you know, help out. But the record of those people who knew him at the time and were there is a little different. But, you know, that was then. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to give people their past. What George Bush did back then, not an issue for me, frankly. Although his military service, I think, is a little... That is something that is worth examining. Rob, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, there. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't
me?
I put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
The IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. Another five Iraqis died from injuries sustained in Saturday's suicide bomb attacks in Karbala, bringing the death toll to 18, local officials said on Sunday. The official put the number of Iraqis wounded in the attack at 160 on top of 24 coalition soldiers wounded, bringing the overall number of wounded to more than 180. On Saturday, insurgents used car bombs, mortars, and small gunfires to attack two coalition military bases and the city council in Karbala, dealing the first heavy blow to the 9,000-strong Polish-led multinational force deployed in central southern Iraq. It also appeared to be the first insurgent offensive that inflicted death toll on Bulgarian and Thai troops, no more than 500 both, operating in the war-torn country. Democrat Dennis Kucinich says the Bush administration is using elevated terror alerts for political gain. The Ohio congressman campaigning at a library services company in central New Hampshire on Friday said if the administration officials have information about terror threats, they should act on it instead of advertising the threat to scare Americans. The government is trying to place fear everywhere, he said. The elevated terror alert level over the holidays is confusing Americans and accomplishing little, he said. Why didn't they just put extra security out, he asked. They are building up fear to become more powerful politically. A top U.S. lawmaker expressed concern on Sunday that the Al-Qaeda may be deliberately spreading false information about security threats in the United States in a bid to fool U.S. authorities and maximize public panic. That's a very inexpensive way for terrorists to do great damage and inflict cost to the United States of America, Representative Christopher Cox said. Asked if the elevated terror alert over the Christmas holiday could have been caused by Al-Qaeda releasing disinformation, Cox, head of the House of Representatives Homeland Security Committee, replied, "That concerns me a great deal. That's a very real possibility. We have to take that into account. I think that at some level, people would expect their government to be taking precautions as if these warnings are real. They would also like not to be scared to death constantly through overreaction," he said. More after this.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick,
who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela,
who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A glowing genetically altered fish that was banned in England made its first U.S. appearance Friday at Underwater Adventures in the Mall of America. The for-profit aquarium under the mall is opening a special display of glowfish, which are common tropical zebrafish that have a gene from a sea coral inserted in them. The fish were developed at a Singapore university to detect pollution, the idea being they would glow in the presence of mercury and other heavy metal contaminants. But now they're slated to be sold as colorful pets, an idea that has caused controversy. For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
At last, the golden age of television is upon us. But alas, this is not the golden age of TV quality, but literally the age of TV gold, when advertisers have become the programming. Leading the way is Disney's ABC television network, which has now opened its expanse of our public airwaves to complete domination by sponsors. I don't mean just the ads that sponsors run on its shows, or even the not-so-subtle placement of sponsors' products in the shows, but rather sponsors that become the featured character of the show. Sears has stepped out as the first of ABC's new advertising stars, putting itself forward as the centerpiece of the network's latest reality show called Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. Not that Sears has any actual dramatic talent, but it does have more than $1 million that it paid to ABC to write the corporation into the script of this 6-part series portraying stories of home renovation. The actual actors will be using Sears tools in their work, adding Sears appliances to the renovated homes and decorating with Sears furniture. If that's too subtle for viewers, there'll also be Sears trucks delivering merchandise. Branded workers from Sears Home Improvement Centers will occasionally arrive on the scene, and the show's cast will make trips to Sears for supplies. The commercially crass rationale for this all-Sears show is that advertisers need a way to outfox you TV viewers who are using your clickers to zap past those annoying commercial breaks. So forget the ads. The sponsors will be the shows. To fabricate this great leap forward, ABC even has a senior vice president for integrated marketing and promotion. He assures us that while, quote, Sears plays a role in the personality of the show, ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped in a show. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, there still are a few artistic standards in television.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. By the way, if you're interested in getting into our chat room, which is full of people right now, a lively conversation going on. Hit the internet, go to tomhartman.com. Pretty much however you spell it will get you there. And click the chat link. And then that'll take you to a form in CompuServe. Click the chat button and boom, you are in. And you can join one of the most interesting, erudite, fascinating, intelligent conversations going on in all of cyberspace. The question for this hour, is the American middle class doomed? Have the Bush administration's policies? Let's zoom back, you know, let's step back and take a little larger picture. This isn't just George Bush and the Bush administration. This is the whole conservative agenda. Have the conservative policies doomed the American middle class? You know, the high point of wages in the United States was 1973. 1973 was the peak of wages in the United States for average wage earners. It was steadily rose from the 1930s. Through the 1940s, Roosevelt strengthened the ability of unions to participate in collective bargaining and in business, and we saw and put into place massive progressive taxation. That is to say, the people at the very, very top of the pile were paying
Now, of course, at the we're paying high tax rates. Now, not on the low end of their income. See, this went back to a philosophy that Thomas Jefferson laid out. Jefferson, when he was president of the United States, translated a banned French economist by the name of Tracy, Napoleon had banned this guy, and Jefferson had to do this secretly. It's fascinating to read his letters about it. And Tracy became the inspiration for Ricardo, David Ricardo, the famous British economist who defined basically modern economics. And de Desuet Tracy was his name. And Jefferson pointed out in one of his letters, I believe it was a letter to Adams, where he was talking about his having translated this thing in secret while he was president. He spent 4 months on it. And what he learned about economics from doing it. He pointed out that it is wrong to tax people, in his opinion, and this was a widely held belief among the founders. It was wrong to tax people on the income that they need to satisfy the necessities of life. In other words, what a person needs to buy food, shelter, clothing, educate their children, provide for health care, and provide for retirement. Those were the basic criteria that Teddy Roosevelt outlined in 1913 when he first called for a living wage, when the phrase living wage came into the lexicon. And Jefferson said there should be no tax on these things. And he said, you know, a sales tax is a tax, the most painful of all the taxes, because people always pay tax on the necessities if you have a sales tax. And anyhow, I don't want to get into the whole, you know, details of that thing. But so Jefferson, for a long, long time, we have pointed out that taxation policy must be reasonable and fair, that it must make sure that people have the ability to pay for the necessities of life. And certainly our taxes, since the, you know, like the alternative minimum tax was not indexed to inflation, and people now in the middle class are being hit with taxes that were designed for people in the wealthy classes, we've got some problems with our tax laws. But the larger problem is the one behind it all that is threatening to destroy the middle class, and that is the conservative policies. You've got the cynical re-election policies of George Bush, where he gives, you know, average Americans a $400 tax rebate. Where does that money come from? It's borrowed from our children. And they're not going to pay it back as $400. They're going to pay it back as $5,000, the wonders of compound interest, when that T-bill, that 20-year T-bill comes due in 20 years, and you know, all the other costs associated with it. So we're borrowing trillions from our children, from our future, to give money to the most wealthy among us right now so that they will then show up for George Bush's fundraisers and kick in, you know, $1 million a night so he can continue having his $1 million nights. That's part of the problem. But the larger problem is this problem of corporatism, the problem of the conservative economic philosophy. See, the problem is conservatives have this new idea. They are the masters of the new ideas, right? I think those of us who consider ourselves middle of the road or liberal would say the old ideas worked fine. The idea of democracy, the idea of fairness, they worked fine. But these new ideas, you know, Mussolini came along with this idea in the 20s of merging business and government together. In fact, the American Heritage Dictionary, 1987, the definition of the word fascism is the merging of state and corporate interests. Having a CEO as a president, having a government that sees as its first function to serve the needs of business rather than the needs of its voters, of its individuals. And this is, you know, the cons have done this before. I mean, they did it in the 1920s, and it brought us the Great Depression. And Franklin Roosevelt, in response to that, you know, had a very specific response to that. He gave a speech in 1936, in July of 1936 in Philadelphia, when he was nominated. It was at the Democratic National Convention when he was nominated to run again for president. And he talked about how the princes, a new royalty has arisen in America. People who live separate from the rest of us. They travel separate from the rest of us. They consider themselves a class apart. They declared class warfare on us, and then whenever anybody points it out, they scream, ah, class warfare! And this economic royalty, these economic royalists, Roosevelt said he was going to take them on. Here's just a couple of quick comments that Franklin Roosevelt made in 1936 about this.
Private enterprise, indeed, became too private. It became privileged enterprise, not free enterprise.
And then he went on to say that these economic royalists...
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power.
And that's the bottom line.
Our allegiance.
And it must be confronted.
And our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
And then just toss this one in. Roosevelt also talked about how these guys love to wrap themselves in the flag and as a way of exploiting the average American.
In vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution.
Yeah. As we're seeing again today, once more.
But in their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for.
And then he points out that they stand for freedom economically as well as politically. Get this.
Now, as always, for over a century and a half, the flag, the Constitution, stand against a dictatorship by mob rule and the overprivileged alike. And the flag and the Constitution stand for democracy, not tyranny, for freedom, not subjection.
And there you go. Franklin Delano Roosevelt in July of 1936. So, President Bush, this from the Washington Post, immigration reform on Bush agenda. Mike Allen wrote this article. President Bush plans to kick off his reelection year by proposing a program that would make it easier for immigrants to work legally in the United States. Do you understand what's happening? It's whatever works best for the corporations. That's what's going to happen. This administration, the entire conservative agenda, the core of the conservative agenda, is cheap labor. You can summarize the entire thing in those two words. It all boils down to cheap labor. It used to be that nations were a reflection of communities. That you have a community and the community says, okay, this is our community. We would like to live in a particular way. For example, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, where I'm broadcasting from, we have a law that says that there's no billboards. It's amazing. You drive in from New York State, and as soon as you hit Vermont, it's as if the air changed. So dramatically different is the landscape. And it's beautiful, you know. And some would say, hey, wait a minute, that's my freedom of speech. And others would say, no, there's this thing called the commons. The stuff that we all own collectively. And the purpose of government is to administer the commons. One main purpose of government is to administer the commons on behalf of us. In other words, we own all this stuff, the government property, the rights of way, the highways that are put there and paid for with our dollars. We own it. We get to decide how it's going to be used. And in the state of New York or the state of Massachusetts, the border Vermont or the state of New Hampshire, they all agreed, hey, billboards, cool, no problem. And in Vermont, we all agreed we'd rather not have billboards. And that, you know, that's called democracy. That's an appropriate thing. And historically, you've had local communities that have defined how they want to be. And they're under assault from, of course, you know, Walmart and its ilk. And states that have defined how they want to be. And this, I mean, Barry Goldwater was all for states' rights, right? I mean, this traditionally has been a conservative and Republican issue as much as for the Democrats, although this bunch has just thrown it out the window, you know, trashing states' rights. When the states decide that they want to have medical marijuana, or the states decide that they want to have the right to, you know, legalize suicide, or, you know, I mean, there's just a long list where the states have been overridden. They want to control their own education policy. No, sorry. But in any case, and then the national government has always historically been perceived as, okay, this is, our government is part of our commons. We control the government. And so we're going to make decisions as a government, as a federal, as a nation that will protect our workers. And what has happened since the Reagan Revolution, and in particular since George W. Bush was elected, but it started with Reagan big time, and Bill Clinton went along with he was singing in the choir with this thing. What has happened is that corporations have risen up and said, sorry, national concerns are no longer of consequence. What is now of consequence is what's best, not for a particular nation, but what is best for transnational corporations. This is George Herbert Walker Bush's New World Order. What is best for transnational corporations? And it's always going to boil down to two words, cheap labor. I'll share more with you about this in just a second. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol is lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
An email that I received from Ken Melman, who's the campaign manager of Bush Cheney 04. Last week I warned you, he writes to me, that liberal special interests had pledged to spend over $400 million to defeat President Bush. Since my message to you, the Washington Post has revealed that these liberal groups have already raised over $185 million of their $400 million goal. They have already begun spending it on ads to defeat our president. This confirms that we will face a tough, well-funded Democrat attack campaign. While the Democrats will have endless soft money to spend attacking President Bush, I hope we'll have your help. Will you stand with President Bush and help build the strongest grassroots campaign in history by making a contribution today?
Oh, President Bush, he just can't raise money. If they only had a brain.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Casey joins the hollow sound of silent people walking down the stairway to the subway in the shadows down below. Following the footsteps through the neon-darkened corridors of silent desperation, never speaking to a soul. The poisoned air he's breathing has the dirty smell of dying, 'cause it's never seen the sunshine and it's never felt the rain.
And welcome back. You're in the real free speech zone. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. President Bush plans to kick off his reelection year by proposing a program that would make it easier for immigrants to work legally in the United States. Lobbyists working with the White House. I always love that phrase because, you know, up until just about 50 years ago, more or less, in most states, what we call lobbying today was a felony. It was called bribery and influencing. Anyhow, lobbyists working with the White House said Bush is developing a plan that would allow immigrants to cross the border legally if jobs are waiting for them. Isn't this just delightful? Immigration policy that Bush is proposing to put together a, quote, immigration policy that helps match any willing employer with any willing employee. So they can say, hey, we're not sending jobs offshore any longer. We're not, you know, this started with Ronald Reagan, but it really picked up steam when Bill Clinton didn't just sign NAFTA and GATT. He worked his butt off to get those things passed. And this is the problem with conservative Democrats. They can be just as destructive to democracy as conservative Republicans. Between that and the Telecommunications Act of 1996, Bill Clinton has just wrought destruction in this land. So now you have the situation where we've lost 3 million jobs now since George Bush became president. And it's very fashionable to blame it on him. And certainly, following supply-side economics rather than, you know, thousands of years of understand, well, certainly since the 1700s, Adam Smith, 1776, The Wealth of Nations, laid out the initial foundations of demand-side economics, and then Tracy, and then Ricardo, and on through. All the way up to John Maynard Keynes, and you get it that these guys, number one, don't understand economics, or number two, they do, and they have sold their souls to the largest corporations. And I have to say, I am not anti-corporate. I own a corporation. I've made money over the years with corporations. I'm all in favor of business. What I'm not in favor of is business that is large enough that it can influence government. Corporate power, economic power, is one of the three types of power that the founders identified that had to be insulated from political power. There was religious power. They didn't want to have a nation that was influenced by historically it had been popes. They didn't want a theocracy. They didn't want economic power, like when we had the East India Company ruling the United States up until 1773 when we began the revolt against them with the Boston Tea Party. And they didn't want the power of war to corrupt a president. That's why the president, in the Constitution, does not have the authority to declare war. Only Congress can do it, because those were the three historic corruptors. And here it has happened again. They're going to create a web-based job registry to be run by the Labor Department. Employers, corporations could post job opportunities that would be available and to prospective immigrants who would then come in under this new temporary visa. And, you know, I'm not opposed to immigration, but it's the philosophy behind it that is so destructive to the United States. Exposing the con in conservative, this is Tom Hartman.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Renee Scarponi, Affiliate Relations Specialist for IE America Radio Network, wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
Some remote glaciers have become the final resting place for chemicals that were used thousands of miles away. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Chemical contaminants can travel far from where they were produced and then accumulate in some of the world's coldest areas. On high mountain slopes and inside the Arctic Circle, scientists have found high concentrations of pesticides and PCBs locked in the ice of glaciers. Jules Blaise is an environmental toxicologist at the University of Ottawa. He says there's a good reason certain chemicals tend to accumulate in these places. In temperate climates, they can evaporate easily in the warm air and drift in the winds. In cooler environments, they can condense again, especially if there's snow.
Snowflakes are very good at scavenging these chemicals from the air and depositing them on the ground. Because snowflakes are very cold and they have a very large surface area, you can picture a snowflake with its many spikes and shapes, which provide a very large surface area for these chemicals to adhere to.
If the snow melts, the chemicals can evaporate again and blow away. But if the snow falls onto a glacier and freezes, the chemicals are locked into the ice and start to accumulate. Blaise says he's found PCBs inside glaciers at high concentrations, even though the chemicals have been banned in the United States and Canada for decades.
Many, many decades of ice is stored in any given glacier, and many of the chemicals that we used back in the 60s are still stored in these glacial horizons.
When the glaciers melt, the water flowing away from them can carry chemical pollution into lakes and streams that would otherwise be pristine. The chemicals can build up in the tissues of aquatic animals, and Blaise says some lakes in the Yukon have become so contaminated that health officials have warned people there against eating too many fish. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey.
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damschutter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family to yours, have
a happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
boys and girls, London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the dust. London calling, see,
we ain't back.
Got no swing.
Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. This is Tom Hartman. The wealth gap is out of control, writes Holly Sklar in a syndicated column that ran in our paper today here, the Burlington or the Montpelier Times Argus. She points out that if poor Americans were a nation, the population would top Alaska, Arkansas, Delaware, Hawaii, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Maine, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Utah, Vermont, West Virginia, Wyoming, and the District of Columbia combined. And that's using a lowball poverty count of 35 million Americans. Keep in mind, in order to become poor, if you earn $719 a month on Social Security, you're not poor. Okay. But still, nonetheless, the 2002 poverty rate of 12.1% was 9% higher than in 1973. The 2002 child poverty rate was 19% higher than its lowest point in 1969. Now, what does this have to do? How is it that poverty has gotten worse since the early 70s? And the wealthy have gotten wealthier. Now, the cons would have you think that it was the failure of our welfare system. See? Well, people are still poor, therefore welfare doesn't work. Well, certainly our welfare systems have a lot of problems. I think just handing money to people is, you know, generally not a good idea. And by and large, we've abolished that stuff. But to say that, well, you know, we still have poverty, therefore we shouldn't have any kind of anti-poverty programs is like saying, well, there are still criminals, let's disband the police. You know, we still have fires. I guess the fire department isn't very effective. Let's do away with it. Come on, people. You've heard this conservative nonsense. Wake up. Now, on the other side, you've got the Forbes 400 combined wealth. The 400 richest people in America. Their combined wealth is $955 billion. These are people who got tax breaks from George Bush recently in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Their combined wealth, the Forbes 400, is greater than the gross domestic product of Canada, which is the eighth largest economy in the world. We haven't seen income disparities like this in the United States. 6 months ago, you could say we haven't seen them since the Great Depression, since 1929, just before the Great Depression. Now, it's even greater than that. You have to go back to the 1880s, to the Gilded Age. We haven't seen them since then. And their wealth? Well, the working people of America are getting poorer. And the poor people of America are getting even poorer. Emergency food requests jump an average 17% over the last year, and emergency shelter requests rose 13% in 25 cities surveyed. This just in the last year. I mean, you see the effects of con economic policies. And, oh, it's just a bunch of bums, right? Yeah, 59% of people requesting food assistance are families with children. 39% of the adults are employed. People are not earning enough to pay for housing. 40% of families who are homeless, 40% of the homeless people in the United States are families with children. 17% of them are employed, and 10% are disabled veterans. So anyhow, the Forbes 400, their combined wealth rose 10% just over the last year. Bush has been very good to them. Since 1982, when Forbes began the list, the Forbes 400 wealth has jumped over 450%. That's adjusting for inflation. Meanwhile, poverty is continuing. Now, what is the thing that is, what is causing this? Why is it that this started exploding in the 1970s and really picked up steam in the 1980s? It's because the late 1970s, business declared war on labor. And in the 1980s, Reagan, by busting, remember breaking up PATCO, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization? Reagan's union busting and support, not just a tacit support, but an overt support of corporations in their wars against organized labor. It started in the 70s with many of the southern states passing legislation, the so-called right-to-work laws, that made it progressive, and a variety of other laws, that made it harder and harder for unions to function. Now, just check this out. This from the World Bank. I mean, the World Bank is not some wild-eyed liberal organization. The World Bank is the group that all liberals love to hate, right? Or so they would say. I mean, I don't know what a liberal means, and I don't know. But the World Bank, you know, they finance these big construction projects that destroy forests and, you know, blah-de-blah-de. You can find a lot wrong with the World Bank. The World Bank just issued a report on globalization and labor standards. In fact, the title of the report, this was issued on February 12th, the title of the report, Labor Standards and Their Role in Economic Development, I said just issued this year, Labor Standards and Their Role in Economic Development, Impact of Globalization. Workers belonging to trade unions in industrialized and developing countries earn significantly more, work fewer hours, and have greater job security. So it's not bringing down their companies than workers not represented by unions. Union membership also reduces income gaps between skilled and unskilled workers and between men and women. Countries that have coordinated collective bargaining of worker contracts between unions and employers tend to have lower and less persistent unemployment. Keep in mind, a CEO making $35 million, which is chump change for a lot of CEOs, that's the equivalent of hiring 1,000 full-time teachers. I mean, is it possible that a CEO could really be worth 1,000 times more than a teacher? And it's not just the CEO. I mean, look at the you know, well over 100 people just in Enron alone. Back when they were when they loaned their corporate private jet, you know, Ken Lay loaned his private jet to George W. Bush to hopscotch around the country in 2000 for his campaign trips. And in return for that, got his own private office in the White House. All those individuals making all that money, and it was a scam. It was a criminal enterprise. To what extent is business, is big business in America, becoming a criminal enterprise? See, the issue isn't one of fairness, and it's not one of economics, it's one of power. This is what it boils down to. Corporations have the right to organize. And in fact, although the Sherman Antitrust Act says they may not organize in ways that block competition, tell that to any community that has had a Walmart walk in. Corporations have the organization of money is a corporation. The organization of people working toward the same interest who are owning something. That's a corporation. And the organization of corporations are called lobbying groups, chambers of commerce, trade associations. Corporations have an absolute and unfettered right to organize, and their organized representatives, pharma, for example, the trade association that represents the pharmaceutical industry that did such a marvelous job in convincing so many members of Congress that they should write into our new Medicare legislation that it's against the law for the federal government to do what the Pentagon is already doing, which is negotiating with drug companies for the lowest price. So they organized all of these pharmaceutical companies. They got together and they organized, and collectively they bargained with the United States Congress to their advantage. But if labor tries to organize, oh, that's a union, that's a look out, the cons would have you think. But here we have the World Bank. The World Bank. Just laying this out. This the report is the result of a review of more than 1,000 studies of unions and collective bargaining. They point out the benefits to countries of unionization, and then they say, in contrast, fragmented unionism and many different union confederations are often associated with higher inflation and unemployment. Now, why would that be? By the way, if you have thoughts on this, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. I'll tell you why that is. It's because it's about the balance of power. When labor is organized and has power that balances the organized power of corporations, then systems become more stable. It's like a teeter-totter. You have stability. This is what brought, this is what created the middle class in America. You know, a middle class had never really existed anywhere in the world until the 20th century. It had always been the extremes, of course. I mean, read Dickens. Go back and read, you know, any of Charles Dickens' books about Victorian era England. You had the very rich and the very poor. And anybody who wasn't very poor and wasn't very rich was on the was what we would today call the high end of the upper middle class. Usually mercantilists, you know, people who owned small businesses, but they were doing okay. But there really wasn't a middle class. The middle class came about in the United States in large part as a result of the policies of Franklin Roosevelt and the activity of unions in the United States. Abraham Lincoln was the first president to aggressively defend the right to strike. Back then, back in the 1860s, when Lincoln was president, the word strike was put in quotation marks in newspapers because it was so new. And when labor had the ability to balance the power of organized capital, then we had a stable era into which a middle class could emerge. And now that the cons are ascendant again, as they were in the 1890s and the 1920s, they are seeking to wipe out the middle class. And you see people sliding farther and farther and farther into debt. They say, "Ah, it's the middle class. They're keeping us alive." No. That we're keeping the middle class alive with these tax cuts and things. No. Tax cuts are designed. I mean, for example, why is it that somebody who earns their living receiving a check in the mail every month, a dividend on their investment, should only pay 15% income tax and zero in FICA, zero in payroll tax, and only 15% income tax? Whereas if you or I were to get a job at Walmart, we're going to have to pay FICA. We're going to have to pay payroll taxes. Even if you're making $2,000 a year, you got to pay payroll taxes. Another one of the big con lies. You see, you know, oh, these people don't pay income taxes. No, but they pay payroll taxes. That's a tax on income, buddy. And you pay income taxes, and it can be much more substantial than 15%. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Joe in Utah is on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm alive and kicking, Joe. What's up?
You sure are. You're keeping the faith, brother, keeping the faith.
You
did a couple of pieces that were really exciting to me. All the stuff you do is. And one was I looked on your website, I couldn't find it, was about the laws that prohibited corporations and people that work for corporations from getting involved in politics. There was a law at one time, and they could be penalized. I wanted to get that information because I've talked with you before. I'm running for U.S. Senate.
Uh-huh.
I want to make that a legislative proposal.
Let me give it to you right now, Joe. This is the one that I have is a Wisconsin law. They existed all across the country. This was Wisconsin law, section 4479A, section 1, chapter 492.
Wisconsin 4479A.
Right. And you can find this on my website. It's actually on the website. If you Google my website for the phrase political contributions by corporations, you'll find it. It's there.
Okay. And then the other one was Teddy Roosevelt's living wage speech.
Right.
That you did. I'll tell you what.
You know, I don't know where that is on the web, but I'll play it right after the next break, and you can record it. The archives will be on White Rose Society, and there's archives.
I'm driving over the road, so I won't be able to record it.
You can find it on the internet. You can find in the archives. Let me just real quickly read to everybody who's listening this law that Joe from Utah is talking about. I love to come back to this thing. This was the law. Every state in the union had a law like this up until recently. This one was only repealed in the 1950s. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. And then the penalty, any officer, employee, agent, or attorney, or other representative of any corporation acting for or on behalf shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than one nor more than 5 years. And if a corporation, it shall be dissolved. That's the law you wanted, Joe. Wisconsin law, 4479A. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
The
following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Apparently, Simple Scotty missed the memo from Bush stating that everybody had to stop trying to link Saddam to 911.
The most dangerous threat we face in a post-September 11th world is the nexus between outlaw regimes with weapons of mass destruction and terrorists. Saddam Hussein had a history of weapons of mass destruction.
Maybe before you were born, you little jackass! Did Scotty not get the memo? There is no connection between 9/11 and Saddam. It came out of the Bush bastard's own mouth. It's come out of all their mouths. Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, all of them. Scotty, hello.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. Our program, by the way, brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S. If you have a Macintosh, they have everything for you, 1-800-511-MACS, and the Newsletter Factory, newsletterfactory.com in Atlanta, Georgia. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Italians get an average of 42 days of paid vacation a year. The French get 37. The Germans get 35. The British get 28. U.S. workers get a measly 16, but tend to take only 14. Here's what Teddy Roosevelt had to say about the need for a living wage. Not just a minimum wage, but a living wage. In 1913, Thomas Edison, as far as I can tell, personally recorded this thing. Here it is. This is just a little 30-second clip of Teddy Roosevelt telling you what a minimum, what a living wage should encompass.
We stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions.
Varies from place to place.
But must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living. A standard high enough to make morality possible, to provide for education and recreation, to care for immature members of the family, to maintain the family during periods of sickness, and to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
No, very simple. A reasonable saving for old age, to care for the family during times of sickness. In other words, your health, it has to cover your health care, it has to cover your retirement, it has to pay your kids' way through college. And it has to provide for a standard living where you don't have to steal to eat. That's a living wage. Why can't we have a living wage in America? The reason we can't have a living wage in America is because the cons don't want it. It's all about power, and money is power in America. And it's time to make a change. You know, we can make a change. Come November of this year, we can make a change. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for being with us so far. Stick around if you're on one of those stations that carries the third hour of the program. This is the place where smart people get their news.
Square. It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
The number of U.S. service members killed and wounded in Iraq has more than doubled in the past 4 months compared with the 4 months preceding them, according to Pentagon statistics. From September 1st through Friday, 145 service members were killed in action in Iraq, compared with 65 from May 1st to August 30th. The 2 4-month intervals cover counterinsurgency operations far costlier than combat operations, which Bush declared over on May 1st. Increases in those wounded in action have been equally dramatic this fall since September 1st. 1,209 soldiers have received battlefield wounds, more than twice the 574 wounded in action from May 1st through August 30th.
Democrat Dennis Kucinich says the Bush administration is using elevated terror alerts for political gain. The Ohio congressman campaigning at a library services company in central New Hampshire on Friday said if the administration officials have information about terror threats, they should act on it instead of advertising the threat to scare Americans. The government is trying to place fear everywhere, he said. The elevated terror alert level over the holidays is confusing Americans and accomplishing little, he said. Why didn't they just put extra security out, he asked. They are building up fear to become more powerful politically. Another 5 Iraqis died from injuries sustained in Saturday's suicide bomb attacks in Karbala, bringing the death toll to 18, local officials said on Sunday. The official put the number of Iraqis wounded in the attack at 160 on top of 24 coalition soldiers wounded, bringing the overall number of wounded to more than 180. On Saturday, insurgents used car bombs, mortars, and small gunfires to attack 2 coalition military bases and the city council in Karbala, dealing the first heavy blow to the 9,000-strong Polish-led multinational force deployed in central southern Iraq. It also appeared to be the first insurgent offensive that inflicted death toll on Bulgarian and Thai troops, no more than 500 both, operating in the war-torn country. More after this.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick,
who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela,
who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A man in Sicily asked a friend to shoot him in the groin in the hope of making his ex-girlfriend feel sorry for him, police said on Friday. Police said they became suspicious when the 27-year-old went to a hospital with wounds from a hunting rifle's pellets in the groin area. At first, he said the wounds had been caused in a hunting accident, but later he admitted he had asked a friend, 16, to shoot him in an attempt to win back the affection of his girlfriend, who had apparently left him because of his violent character. The man's wounds are expected to heal, doctors said. For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours?
Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
At last, the golden age of television is upon us. But alas, this is not the golden age of TV quality, but literally the age of TV gold, when advertisers have become the programming. Leading the way is Disney's ABC television network, which has now opened its expanse of our public airwaves to complete domination by sponsors. I don't mean just the ads that sponsors run on its shows, or even the not-so-subtle placement of sponsors' products in the shows, but rather sponsors that become the featured character of the show. Sears has stepped out as the first of ABC's new advertising stars, putting itself forward as the centerpiece of the network's latest reality show called Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. Not that Sears has any actual dramatic talent, but it does have more than $1 million that it paid to ABC to write the corporation into the script of this 6-part series portraying stories of home renovation. The actual actors will be using Sears tools in their work, adding Sears appliances to the renovated homes and decorating with Sears furniture. If that's too subtle for viewers, there'll also be Sears trucks delivering merchandise. Branded workers from Sears Home Improvement Centers will occasionally arrive on the scene, and the show's cast will make trips to Sears for supplies. The commercially crass rationale for this all-Sears show is that advertisers need a way to outfox you TV viewers who are using your clickers to zap past those annoying commercial breaks. So forget the ads. The sponsors will be the shows. To fabricate this great leap forward, ABC even has a senior vice president for integrated marketing and promotion. He assures us that while, quote, Sears plays a role in the personality of the show, ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped in a show. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, there still are a few artistic standards in television.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here on the IE America Radio Network. You know, on December 13th, when Saddam Hussein was captured, it wasn't a Friday, was it? No, I'm quite sure it wasn't. Anyway, when U.S. forces captured Saddam Hussein on the 13th of this month, George Bush not only celebrated, but he also, I don't have a good word, but he also legislated. He pulled a pen out of his pocket, and he signed into law a bill that he had been reluctant to sign when there would have been any public scrutiny. You will recall when Patriot 2 was rolled out and everybody said, oh, no, you know, it's a... And it had all these draconian provisions, including one that said that the FBI can snoop into your personal life. They can look into your... even your cash transactions. And they can force certain companies that typically have transactions with people in cash to require people to give them their names and addresses, as if a terrorist is going to give the right name and address, right? But in any case, That they can look at your travel agency records, your pharmacy records, your bank records, they already had the bank records part. Your investment records, your pawnbroker, if your bookie is legal, if you're in Vegas, they can look at any of it. In fact, they can look at any of your financial dealings if they choose. And people just freaked out. You know, Patriot 2, it's like, you know, Big Brother is not only in our bedrooms, but now it's people said, no, we don't want this. In fact, over 200 communities now across the United States have passed specific ordinances, specific resolutions, saying that they don't want the Patriot Act, that asking their police not to enforce it, not to participate, not to, you know, this is a PR disaster for Ashcroft and his other little neo-fascists. And so this Patriot 2 legislation, the trial balloon went up and it got shot down even by conservatives. I mean, it was Republicans were as horrified by this thing as were Democrats. And so what they did was they chopped it into pieces, and they started dropping those little pieces here and there in little bits and pieces of legislation. And one of those was the legislation that George Bush signed as soon as the attention of the nation and of the networks, the news networks, had gone to all Saddam all day. We had 48 hours roughly, 24 hours solidly, of coverage of nothing but Saddam. And the Bush administration has gotten so good at this. I mean, this is the most poll-driven administration in the history of the United States. Karl Rove is running polls continuously there in the White House. And focus groups, I mean, down to testing individual words in speeches and labels to apply to their opponents. And, you know, they got it. Hey, this isn't going to fly. And they also have become masters of the drip-drip release. Like there was that one Pakistani terrorist who was arrested, and they kept quiet his arrest for 6 weeks until Dick Cheney was being investigated. And it was really starting to make the news that Halliburton had been selling oil field equipment to Saddam Hussein. Not way back in the 80s when Don Rumsfeld was going there on behalf of Ronald Reagan, but just 4 years ago. That just 4 years ago, Dick Cheney was selling oil field equipment and other items of value to Saddam Hussein. And it was starting to come out in the press really big. And along with it was coming out the fact that Cheney was still owned all these stock options in Halliburton, and that he was still getting paid by Halliburton. And there was another corporate scandal breaking that Cheney had to do with. I forget what it was now. And suddenly they pull this guy out of their back pocket and say, oh, by the way, we arrested this guy. He's a major terrorist. And boom, like a herd of lemmings, the entire press goes, oh, let's go. But we'd had this guy for 6 weeks. But they pull news stories out of their pocket when it's convenient. And this is well known in Washington, D.C. It's increasingly well known across the country. It's why George Nethercutt, the congressman from Washington State, made the comment when they announced that they had found Saddam that, you know, probably they had him for a while. In hindsight, it turns out we didn't have him for a while. The Kurds had him for a while. But in any case, you know, that wasn't one of them, apparently. Although, you know, some people are saying it was. But the real issue here is that, what they do when the news cycle is, they use the news cycle. They play us like a violin. They play the media like a violin. It's just incredible. When things are going bad for this administration, when the news is starting to look like, hey, it's a scandal, it's another Bush scandal, you can bet some war thing is going to pop out of the hat. They're going to discover that some country has uranium, or they're going to discover that they just found a hijack, or they're going to go to an orange alert, or, you know, whatever. There will be something. that will some massive something that will divert our attention, because they have a collection of them, and they just pull one out when they need it. And on the other hand, when the media is super focused on something, whether it's Kobe Bryant or whether it's, in this case, the arrest of Saddam Hussein, they also have things that they really don't want to do when people are looking. And this was one of them. As this article in the San Antonio Current by David Martin points out, on December 13, when U.S. forces captured Saddam Hussein, President George W. Bush not only celebrated with his national security team, but he also pulled out his pen and signed into law a bill that grants the FBI sweeping new powers. Few are aware, he says, consequently, while most Americans watched as Hussein was probed for head lice, few were aware that the FBI had just obtained the power to probe their financial records, even if the feds don't suspect your involvement in crime or terrorism. It's called the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2004, a legislative behemoth that funds all the intelligence agencies. The act included a simple yet insidious redefinition of financial institution, which previously referred to banks, but now includes any business whose cash transactions have a high degree of usefulness in criminal, tax, or regulatory matters. In other words, everything. Your stockbroker, your car dealer, your casino, your credit card companies, your insurance agencies, your jeweler, your airlines, the U.S. Post Office. And on goes the list. In the meantime, most recently, Toledo, Ohio joined the list. In fact, we ought to, you know, caught you doing something right. Yeah, to Toledo, Ohio. You done good. You know, the best way to manage is to catch people doing things right rather than catching them doing things wrong. And Toledo has really done something right here. They joined, five other communities in Ohio and saying that they don't want the Patriot. We don't want those stinking Patriot Act. The only other cities to pass such a resolution in Ohio were Oberlin, Oxford, Yellow Springs. But now Toledo, Ohio has weighed in. Communities as well as communities in 35 other states, including the city councils of Baltimore, Chicago, Las Vegas, Detroit, Austin, Denver, and Minneapolis, have spoken out against the Patriot Act. So what does this mean? There is a new kind of Republican that has emerged. And the old Republicans are the ones who are referred to by the new Republicans as the rhinos, the Republicans in name only, like Voinovich, who says, hey, before we give a tax break, shouldn't we also cut spending so that we have a balanced budget like we got from Bill Clinton? And they go, he's a rhino. He's a Republican in name only. And Olympia Snow, you know, says, well, you know, should we be reconsidering these slashing civil liberties and giving government some? She's a rhino. You know, it's funny, the articles like I write for commondreams.org that you can find on our website at tomhartman.com, articles on democracy, increasingly are starting to show up on right-wing websites with little footnotes attached to them. I find this very interesting. And the footnotes say, imagine how this would affect us if Hillary was president. In other words, there'll be an article about, you know, the government being able to snoop more aggressively, or Bush claiming that he can round up protesters and herd them into free speech zones so that nobody can, you know, the press doesn't see them and their protest signs, and nobody can hear them. They're out of the range of the news media. And the right wing sites now, not the con sites. But the true conservative sites, the old line Republican sites, they're starting to say, you know, this might be a useful thing over the short term for partisan political purposes, being able to use the FBI like Richard Nixon did with COINTELPRO, where you can, you know, to not just spy on domestic groups, but even provoke them. as you know, not necessarily with the FBI, we're not really sure whom, but clearly was happening in Miami with FTAA protests. But using that power, using the power, you know, they're saying it might be a good thing for the Republicans to be able to have the power of a strong government to spy on its people, to disrupt organizations that it doesn't agree with, to limit the free speech of people who are speaking out against the administration. Might be a good thing to help George Bush get reelected, which is why the Patriot Act, many of the worst provisions of the Patriot Act, expire in 2005, right after the election. Might be good things for the Bush dynasty. But what happens if in 2008 a Democrat gets elected? See, everybody's assuming that Bush is unstoppable in 2004, everybody on the right. What happens if Hillary gets in? Or if Howard Dean makes another run and wins this time? What if Jeb Bush isn't a strong enough candidate in 2008? And they're starting to get, you know, night sweats and chills and trembles. So the new Republicans are revealing themselves, and it's a pretty scary picture. How have the new Republicans left their party's tradition behind? This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's Tom Hartman, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, and the Newsletter Factory, newsletterfactory.com, and the organic wine company, ecowine.com, our marvelous sponsors for this hour. And lest we not forget,
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
It was George W. Say it again, George.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September 11th. Why doesn't America know that? Why doesn't America know that George W. Bush said that? Well, anyhow, it's a bit of a digression. Our number, by the way, 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937, if you would like to weigh in on the issues of the day. The Republican Party, the New York Times, puts forward in the December 28th, yesterday's editorial. The Republican Party has been in charge of the national agenda for almost 3 years now. And this, the Times says, gives us an unobstructed view of what the 21st century version of the party looks like. And they go on to point out that the Republicans apparently embrace big government. $400 billion expansion of Medicare, although it was to the benefit of corporations. A party that once campaigned to abolish the Department of Education has produced an education plan that involves unprecedented federal involvement in local public schools to the benefit of testing corporations. They talk about the Republican doctrines that have disappeared. Federalism, for example. Republicans in Washington have been resisting state experimentation in areas ranging from pollution control to anti-spam legislation to prescription drugs, and then I would add to medical pot and suicide. Since then, since 9/11, the Justice Department has enlarged the intrusive powers of government by, among other things, authorizing sneak and peek searches of private homes and suspending traditional civil liberties for certain defendants. And then they get to the nub of the issue. And this is, you know, I've been saying this for a year here. The modern party's key allegiance is to corporate America, and its tolerance for intrusive federal government ends when big business is involved. Whenever you hear a con whining and complaining about big government, you know that they are talking about government involvement in protecting the environment or you and me from corporate predations. And on the other hand, whenever you hear a con talk about the wonders of the Patriot Act, and yes, George W. needs those free speech zones, and how dare those people show up in Miami to protest the free trade area of the Americas, you will know that they are not opposed to big government and the power thereof. The New York Times goes on to point out they have chipped away at environmental protections that interfere with business interests on everything from clean air to federal lands. They're cutting overtime pay for white-collar workers. big government. Discretionary spending has jumped 27% in just the last 2 years. This is one of the largest increases in government. You know the two biggest increases in government in the history of the United States were brought to us by Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush? Who say that they don't like big government? See, I don't like big government is, in the con parlance, a code phrase for we want to put government on the back of the middle class and the poor, and we want to ratchet down and control those who have no power. But those with great wealth and power, we're going to leave alone completely. Big government won't bother them. In fact, it will serve them. Truth in Broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Hi, this is Mark the Animal Hannes from Animal Talk for IE America Radio Network, wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
Some remote glaciers have become the final resting place for chemicals that were used thousands of miles away. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Chemical contaminants can travel far from where they were produced and then accumulate in some of the world's coldest areas. On high mountain slopes and inside the Arctic Circle, scientists have found high concentrations of pesticides and PCBs locked in the ice of glaciers. Jules Blaise is an environmental toxicologist at the University of Ottawa. He says there's a good reason certain chemicals tend to accumulate in these places. In temperate climates, they can evaporate easily in the warm air and drift in the winds. In cooler environments, they can condense again, especially if there's snow.
Snowflakes are very good at scavenging these chemicals from the air and depositing them on the ground. Because snowflakes are very cold and they have a very large surface area, you can picture a snowflake with its many spikes and shapes, which provide a very large surface area for these chemicals to adhere to.
If the snow melts, the chemicals can evaporate again and blow away. But if the snow falls onto a glacier and freezes, the chemicals are locked into the ice and start to accumulate. Blaise says he's found PCBs inside glaciers at high concentrations, even though the chemicals have been banned in the United States and Canada for decades.
Many, many decades of ice is stored in any given glacier, and many of the chemicals that we used back in the 60s are still stored in these glacial horizons.
When the glaciers melt, the water flowing away from them can carry chemical pollution into lakes and streams that would otherwise be pristine. The chemicals can build up in the tissues of aquatic animals, and Blaise says some lakes in the Yukon have become so contaminated that health officials have warned people there against eating too many fish. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware. John Seip from United Marketing Force. Jay Brentlinger from Orban. And, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show. Take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years. So join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Come heed me, good brothers, come here one and all. Don't brag about standing, or you'll surely fall. You're shining your light, and shine it you should. But you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. No earthly good, you are no earthly good. You're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. You're shining your light right and shine it you should. But you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good.
Oh, an interesting, an odd bit of music there. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where despair is not an option. Get active. Okay, this administration says big government is a good thing if it's stopping crime. Right? I mean, this is a hallmark of con administrations. So let me play you a little bit of testimony by some people who have been responsible for the deaths of far more people than Osama bin Laden ever dreamed of. They knew they were causing these deaths, and they did it anyway. Here we go.
Please consider yourself to be under oath.
Yes or no? Do you believe nicotine is not addictive?
I believe nicotine is not addictive, yes. Congressman, cigarettes and nicotine clearly do not meet the classic definitions of addiction.
I don't believe that nicotine or our products are addictive.
I believe that nicotine is not addictive.
I believe that nicotine is not addictive.
And I too believe that nicotine is not addictive.
The heads of the six largest tobacco companies in the United States denying under oath a truth that their companies had known since the 1930s, and any rational person knew since the days that Sir Francis Drake first brought tobacco back to the old world, back to Europe. I think it was Sir Francis Drake, whoever it was. Anyway, what are these guys in jail? I mean, look at who's in jail. It is not those who can afford. Can you imagine? I mean, here in Montpelier, just in Vermont, rather, just a few weeks ago, a big news story. I mean, you know, big news here. In a lot of states, big news is who got murdered. Big news here is, you know, somebody's caught adulterating maple syrup, you know, stretching it out with sugar water or something. I'm not kidding. I mean, it actually makes. There was a trial that ran for an entire week where they were going on and on about this, but this was a couple of kids got busted with OxyContin, and they had, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 pills, something like that, enough that they fell into the category of you've got enough to be a dealer, and so we're going to prosecute you as if you're a dealer. And one got, I think, 2 or 3 years, and the other got 4 or 5 years in prison. They didn't happen to be multimillionaires, well connected to a Republican administration that owes them many favors. Anyhow, so when government is big, the Republicans traditionally said they don't like big government, but it is under the Republican administrations, Nixon, Reagan, Bush Sr., and Bush Jr., that you've seen greater growth in government than you did under Carter, under Clinton, or under JFK. Now, LBJ, frankly, I don't have the numbers. I don't remember LBJ. It may well be that he blew up government or increased it at the same rate that the others did, that the Republicans did. I honestly don't know. I'll have to find out. But I do know that the biggest inflators, the biggest growers of federal government have been George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. And here we see not only is discretionary spending up 27% over the last 2 years, but congressional pork is up more than 40%. The Republicans are in charge. Grab hold of your wallet if you are in the middle class. If you are the extremely rich, open your wallet because money will pour into it. And not only do they does the New York Times point out that congressional pork is up more than 40%, but they point out that much of that pork is directly tied to the demands of big business. Agriculture subsidies to corporate farms have swollen to new heights, while energy policy has been reduced to a miserable grab bag of special interests for the oil, gas, and coal companies. And then they summarize this thing by just pointing out the hypocrisy of it all. A political majority that believes in big government for people and little or no government for corporations has produced an unsustainable fiscal policy that combines spending on social programs with pork and tax cuts for the rich. Now, you talk about redistribution of wealth, redistribution of income. The Republican Party has become have become the absolute champions of it. They are redistributing wealth upward at a rate that has not been seen in the United States ever in history in terms of government action. Never before. And on it goes. By the way, the outing of Valerie Plame, the CIA agent who was outed by a senior administration official in the White House, looks like they're moving forward, and the White House is getting a little nervous. They're asking that the Justice Department either get a prosecution going immediately so that they can get it, you know, they can get, throw somebody in jail and get it over and done with, or that they make sure that it doesn't happen until December of next year. This from the Washington Post, an article by Mike Allen and Dana Milbank. Leaks probe is gathering momentum. In Friday's newspaper, the Justice Department has added a fourth prosecutor to the team investigating the leak of an undercover CIA officer's identity, while the FBI has said a grand jury may be called to take testimony from administration officials. Boy, if a grand jury is called, look out. Because you cannot, your ability to invoke your Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination is dramatically minimized in ways, frankly, that I think are unconstitutional, but that's neither here nor there anyhow. Some administration officials say they believe charges will eventually result, although it could be as long from now as 2005. Surprise, surprise. Yep, 2005. That's when the Patriot Act will expire, or big chunks of it. That's when they will figure out who outed the CIA agent. That's, you know, all safely after the cons figure. George W. has been re-coronated, reinstalled. So now the question on my mind, and I'm be interested to hear what your thoughts are on this too. Our number 1-800-TALK, yes, if you want to weigh in, is will Dick Cheney be replaced on the ticket, since so much of the corrupt and in error policies of this administration seem to track right back to Dick Cheney? I mean, here's a guy who still owns stock options in Halliburton, who's still drawing a paycheck from Halliburton while he's vice president of the United States, and Halliburton's getting all these sweetheart deals. Halliburton incorporates offshore under his watch to avoid paying U.S. taxes. Some Republican congressman tried to put a thing into the Gulf War the $87 billion legislation, saying that no company that has incorporated in the Caymans in order to avoid paying U.S. taxes can get any of that money. And Cheney sees to it that that's removed because it would exclude Halliburton. You know, Republicans are facing a tough job. My prediction, and I've been saying this for almost a year now, is that George W. is going to dump Dick Cheney. If the Democrat is getting any traction at all, see, their nominating convention is going to be so close to the actual election, since they're choosing to trade on 9/11. They're going to do it in September in New York City. It's going to be so close to the actual election that this can be their October surprise. So all they need would be to have Rudy Giuliani take Dick Cheney's place on the ticket. And Rudy Giuliani is so well thought of by so many Americans because of his competent performance during 9/11 that there are, you know, most of the polls show, those pollsters who get into speculative polling, that a Bush-Giuliani ticket would be almost unstoppable. That might be the stealth. And in fact, there are Republicans, it turns out, who are pushing for this. and not, you know, not just the fringe. Colin Powell, for example, not specifically pushing for Giuliani, although I'm sure if his name was floated by them, they would leap at it. But they call them the realists, the Republican realists. Interesting article by Jim Loeb, Wither Cheney, on antiwar.com. Within the administration, the realists are led by Secretary of State Colin Powell. And then there's former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft, former Secretary of State James Baker, the former president himself, George Herbert Walker Bush, would apparently like to see Dick Cheney replaced at the top of the ticket, or the number two position on the ticket. And he apparently, through Scowcroft and Baker, who are friends and former aides of his, has passed the word on to Richard Lugar and Chuck Hagel. Chuck, Mr. Voting Machines Hagel. That, hey, it's time to bump this guy off the ticket. A growing number of analysts, Jim Loeb says, have come to see Cheney as the key administration figure in moving to the United States toward the war in Iraq. And they think that without Cheney running interference for them, according to this view, the neocons and other hawks will quickly be marginalized in a second Bush term. And that's something that they think would be good both for the Republican Party and for the United States. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Republican politics are always fascinating. It's like, you know, who can stab whom in the back fast? You know, it's all about, well, you know, Democratic politics aren't that different. And look what's going on now with Nader and the Green Party. It's just politics is politics. And speaking of which, Vice President Dick Cheney, this is the Seattle Post-Intelligencer wrote a nice piece last week, published a nice piece. Helen Thomas actually wrote it. You know, Helen Thomas, she, the grand dame of American journalism, she's in her 80s now, and she was always the first person to be questioned during the White House press briefings until she asked George W. Bush a hard question. And then they moved her from the front row to the back, and they stopped asking her questions, trying to marginalize her because she dared question the king, something you just don't do. Well, Dick Cheney is accusing the press of what he calls cheap shot journalism. He says people don't check the facts. And Helen Thomas says, well, okay, you know, she's the media. She's going to check the facts. She says, what is this cheap shot journalism that Cheney's talking about? Well, perhaps it's that the news media keep pointing out that Cheney has served for 5 years as CEO of Halliburton, which has received $5 billion in government contracts, many of the no-bid variety, for Iraqi reconstruction. Maybe it's that Cheney still has financial ties to Halliburton, despite his denials. He continues to receive deferred compensation from the company, including payments of about $150,000 in 2001 and $160,000 in 2002, and additional payments are forthcoming. In addition, the vice president has some 433,000 shares of unexercised Halliburton stock options due to expire between 2007 and 2009. The options will have value only if Halliburton's stock price improves, Helen Thomas says. Back in August, Dick Cheney said to the veterans of foreign wars, and I quote, simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction, no doubt that he is massing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us. Now, I think anybody, any rational person who really believed that Saddam Hussein had these weapons, number one, really believed that he had a delivery system for them, number two, and really believed that he was planning to use them against us, number three. Anybody who really believed all three of those things would be able to make a pretty good case, I think, for going in and attacking Iraq. And Cheney certainly talked like he believed those things. The problem is that he was privy to the same intelligence that now the world has seen. I mean, David Kaye is now quitting his job. There's no weapons of mass destruction to be found. He had the weapons inspectors, the previous ones from the 90s. Scott Ritter headed the team up saying, hey, there's nothing there. During the Gulf War, most of it was destroyed. What wasn't destroyed, we went in over a seven-year period and destroyed, you know, from 1991 to 1998, destroyed everything. And then, and it's amazing to me how these folks can come on TV and just spin lies. And on the radio, I mean, they'll say, hey, you know, Cheney would defy the world. We had to go in there because he was defying the United Nations. He was refusing to get rid of his weapons of mass destruction, and he was refusing to allow inspections. And don't they remember Saddam's spokesman, Tariq Aziz, saying, our country is open. There are no weapons of mass destruction here. We have destroyed them all. And you may look anywhere, anytime, under any circumstances, including underneath Saddam's bed. You could even go into the presidential palaces. And Hans Blix took him up on it. And went over there and looked all over that country. And the whole rest of the world knows this. And Americans remember this. And yet these cons still go on TV and say, he was defying the United Nations. He was complying. What happened? What has happened to truth in America? Well, it's been hijacked by the Republicans, the bottom line. Exposing the con and conservative, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take a Leave Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
The Tom Hartman Show.
We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius Satellite Radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is we have to, I mean, I think Al Franken's right in that we have to, we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us and slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back on the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth Arena, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. What an extraordinary day. By the way, our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont, engineered by Shar Jones down in Detroit, our music edited by Brad Walrod, and thanks, special thanks to all the folks in the chat room who dropped in and shared the last 3 hours with us. When I was talking about Dick Cheney and his seeming sincerity in believing that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, when now we know that he very selectively filtered intelligence information with an eye to presenting it to the public in order to rationalize getting Iraq in order to get its oil. One of the folks in the chat room, WFH171, says, we know. Oh, where to go? We think he is hiding some serious super soakers somewhere. Yes, indeed. Got to look out for those super soakers, those weapons of mass watering. The Army, angry military reservists and their relatives across the country are flooding Congress with complaints about the adequacy of the equipment given to members of the reserves and the National Guard in Iraq. This is an issue that I think you're going to see some response to this pretty quickly. Lawmakers in both parties are getting an earful, says the Sun Herald article, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, an article by Philip Dine. Representative Edward Schrock of Virginia says, it's just unthinkable we would send any units into a war zone not fully equipped. What they've been doing, basically, is they've been saying, okay, the regular Army, they have body armor because they're the regular Army. But the reservists, hey, they're just reservists. So, but now they're all over there. They're all getting shot at the same time, and families are having to do, you know, Tupperware parties to raise enough money to get body armor for their kids. It's a tough one. It's a real tough one. But this is one that I think is going to resolve itself. Although it's a tragedy that they're there in the first place to defend the interests of Halliburton. Thanks for being with us today. Be sure to join us tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. I'll see you then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do.